The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin. In Texas.
Hi, I'm Sif Hyder, the founder of Array. I'm a wellness entrepreneur and digital creator, and this is my show, the Dream Bigger Podcast. Listen, I love dreaming big, but you know what I love more? Actually having the resources to make those big dreams happen. And hey, dreams can sometimes be private jets, but other times they can look a little something like having the best skin of your damn life, or starting a successful business, or delving into spirituality. So on this podcast, I chat with experts and thought leaders from different fields about their tips and tricks on doing exactly that. So let's get right into it.
Hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Dream Bigger Podcast. Now, today's episode is a must listen for anyone who is currently on the entrepreneurship journey or is thinking of starting a business at any point. I am speaking to Wendy Zomnier, who is a seasoned expert in entrepreneurship. Not only did she launch and work on Urban Decay, I mean, no big deal, for I think it was like 20 years, okay? Insane amount of time. And now she went on to start Caliray. So not only has she graduated from, you know, an expert business already, but now she went on to start another one. So today's episode is a heavy entrepreneurship episode. You will learn so much from Wendy. She is so wise when it comes to this. I mean, no surprise because she's been doing it forever. She gives us so much insight on what it means to be a category builder because back when she started Urban Decay, makeup just wasn't what it is today. You know, like right now when we look at makeup as an industry, there's just so much. There's so many color cosmetics. There's heavy makeup, there's light makeup, there's pigmented color, there's no makeup makeup. You know what I mean? There's so much. And back when she started, it just wasn't like that. Not to mention, you guys, this is like pre-Sephora. This is pre-internet. Like it was a crazy time. It's just not what we are used to today. So Wendy takes us through all of that. And then she talks about starting Caliray, her lifestyle as an entrepreneur, managing work and life. So there's so much in there. I really, really enjoyed speaking to her, and I think you guys are going to learn a lot. Also, I have to say, before I recorded this episode, you know, I always put out that Instagram story where I ask you guys to send in any questions from Wendy, and I got a number of DMs from my friends who are beauty founders who had really nice things to say about her, which I mean, it shows a lot about her character. Okay, so before we dive in, I want to bring you guys this week's review, which comes to us from Make Dab One. And they say, I've been listening for a while now, and I am invigorated and learned so much from every single episode, including your solo episodes. Continue being so genuine and bringing value. I listened to the hair episode, I believe 257, and it was great. I would love if you can do an episode like that, but with an ethnic hair professional and product provider. The founder of Melanin Hair Care could be a good suggestion. Maybe you can also do an episode on building a business from scratch in these times. Once again, thank you and your team so much. This is such a good recommendation, Make Dab. I'm definitely going to take a look and see what I can do to bring on a founder just like this. And guys, if you do have a couple of minutes and feel like the show has brought you value, I would so appreciate if you took the time to leave me a rating and a review. All you have to do is open up the Apple Podcast app and scroll down to where it says leave a rating and a review. In the review section, please let me know anything, absolutely anything you want me to hear, whether that's a one sentence review on how you liked the podcast or what it's done for you, or, you know, like today's review, leaving a suggestion on a future guest that you want to see or the kinds of episodes that you've really enjoyed. And with that, let's welcome Wendy Zomnier to the Dream Bigger Podcast.
So I want to talk about the process of starting Urban Decay, because this was really a different era than the one we're in right now. It was like pre-social media. So tell me about starting a business at that time.
So it was the barriers to entry were really different in the 90s than they are today. Right.
Wait, you guys have been around since the 90s?
Oh my gosh. I had an event, a launch event, and there were people at the event who weren't alive, influencers who were not alive when I started Urban Decay.
Stop.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
We launched our first product in January of 1996.
I was like 4 years old.
I know. You're a baby.
That's crazy.
You're baby. I was seven. No, just kidding. But yeah, it was pretty crazy. Uh-huh. So there wasn't any social media. Mm-hmm. I actually did social media of a sort. I had these young women who their mom had a fashion showroom in New York, and they were kind of the it girls of New York. And I would send them a box of product and cash. And they would go to events and pass out the product. And they would make, it was like their side hustle.
Wait, that's like pre-influencer seating.
It's right. It's pre-influencer.
Love it.
There was a lot of stuff like that we did because there wasn't a way around it. Like I would track down celebrities, not through their social media. I would literally like read in magazines or the newspaper, like where people were recording. And I would go to the library and look up in the phone book, all the recording studios. And
phone then
I would
just book.
Phone book. Maybe some of your listeners don't even know what a phone book is. Look it up. Ask Google. And I would look through the phone book and find the name of the studio and call studios until I found where they were recording. And then I'd be like, hey, I have product samples to send you. And you would send them to celebrities. It was before they had product managers, so they would take them and wear it and talk about it. And it was a whole different moment.
So they'd just talk about it, like, you know, without any kind of like advertorial. Like, it was just like very organic. Is that how it would work?
Everything was really organic. You had to get people on board. I know, it was the time.
What a time.
So that's what I mean. The barriers to entry were really different. Like now, if you wanted to start a beauty company, you could Google like where to start a beauty company, where to make lipstick, how do I find packaging? Like you could get all of those answers. Like we couldn't get those answers, mm-hmm. but there were also not 10 gazillion beauty companies out there. In fact, Urban, Hard Candy, Benefit really kind of paved the way, really democratized beauty.
You know, I have such a crazy story. So this must have been when I was like 10 years old. Okay. So one of my mom's best friends was visiting and she went to Sephora. Okay. So this is like a long time ago. And Sephora, I think, was still like, it hadn't obviously taken hold of the world like right. It has today, but it was still like a destination. And I remember her going and she had gotten something from Urban Decay. It was like an eyeshadow palette or like a blush something. And I was like, I want to be just like her. This is like the prettiest makeup I've ever seen. Aww. Like it was way back when. And that was actually one of my first memories I have when it comes to makeup. And like, it's interesting that I'm sitting here talking to you because that's like one of my earliest memories when it comes to makeup.
Well, I'm glad it was one of your earliest memories because my earliest memories were about, you have to look like the perfect blonde woman mm-hmm. with blue eyes and even features.
Yeah.
And if you buy this product, maybe, possibly, you will take one step closer to looking like her. And I just always felt like that was so wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what we were trying to do with Urban. I mean, that's the whole reason for the name Urban Decay. Like if you see like a crumbling brick wall or a fire escape that's falling down, like, yeah, it's falling apart, but it's got a story to tell. There's something deeper there. It's actually really beautiful in its own unique way. So that's really what the name is all about. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to take makeup and really make it about self-expression, about showing the world who you are. We made it for men and women. You can tell from the packaging, it was very sort of unisex or no sex. And that was really revolutionary back in the 90s. Like no one was doing that.
So what made you even decide that you wanted to disrupt that category? Because I always think like people who disrupt a category, they're quite brave because you're kind of taking a bet on things moving in a different direction.
Well, this is a story about women supporting women, which I think is so important. We were talking about just now. It's so important. So I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always knew I wanted to start my own business. I always loved makeup. Mm-hmm. I would have never in a million years thought, start a makeup company. When I started Urban, it was like we were talking about back in the 90s, and there were only big beauty companies. There was Estee Lauder, there was L'Oreal, there was Coty, there was Shiseido. That was basically it. You had these big giant companies. They controlled all the department store makeup. There wasn't Sephora. And I met a woman named Sandy Lerner. She basically invented the internet. No one really gives a woman credit for inventing the internet, but her and her husband, Len, created the router in their living room and they built it. They figured it out. Wow. They were both grad students at Stanford And Len ran the science department computers, local area network. She ran the business department computers. The networks couldn't network. I know that that is like a foreign concept to people today, but they couldn't network. So they figured out how to have the networks talk. Basically, Cisco router. Mm-hmm. That was it. So Sandy had started that. She basically disrupted tech as a woman in the late 80s. And she just had a vision for doing the same thing with makeup. And I happened to meet her and had all these marketing ideas. I had a point of view on makeup. And we basically came together to disrupt this industry. I could not have done it without Sandy saying, let's disrupt it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go do that again. I'm just a girl from Fort Worth, Texas. I would have never believed that that was possible. So I think the lesson I've learned and why I go speak for young women's groups, even junior high school young women, is because I really think it's all about telling other women that they can do this. Like, it's really, really important that we support each other. We provide each other with ideas, information, we share resources. I think that's how we're gonna continue to build great things.
I couldn't agree more.
Nish and I went to this retreat that was hosted by one of our investors, where he invited a whole bunch of founders that he had invested in. And at that retreat, I met the founders of OneSkin. And me being a skincare nerd, wanted to understand what it was about OneSkin that was so special. So what I learned was that, you know, the founders are these super science-y PhDs who have been testing skincare products essentially in their lab to see what it does to skin. So OneSkin's philosophy is essentially that you don't need a complicated routine to have better skin, and they see their skincare product as topical supplements. So they have this proprietary peptide called the OS01 peptide, and it's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent cells. I think I'm saying that right. Those are like notorious zombie cells that contribute to skin aging. So fewer zombie cells essentially mean healthier, younger looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, reduced age spots, and a stronger natural barrier, something that's especially important at this time of the year. So I personally love the science. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I learned from them and now continuing to learn from them as they come on as a partner on the podcast. In a third-party 12-week clinical study performed by third-party research organization, OS01 Face was clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier, improve skin health markers, and diminish visible signs of aging. Wrinkles were diminished by 87% of users, which is insane. They also leverage their in-house cutting-edge R&D platform, where they're able to measure the efficacy of age reversal molecules in their lab. By staining skin samples in the lab for senescent cells and analyzing changes to the skin's genetic data before and after exposure to the OS01 peptide, one skin scientist found that OS01 peptide reverses skin's biological age by reducing the number of senescent cells by up to 50%. I mean, you guys, the stats are actually crazy, and I'm really excited to be partnering with OneSkin because I was really, really impressed with the founder. So I met two of the founders, but I spent most of my time speaking to Carolina, who was incredibly, incredibly just knowledgeable about all things skincare. So she is a world of knowledge. This skincare brand has so much integrity. OneSkin is more than just skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code DREAMBIGGER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code DREAMBIGGER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support the show and tell them that I sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. And if you're wondering which product I personally can't get enough of, it's their eye cream. I had just finished my old eye cream a few weeks ago, and I switched over to the OneSkin one, and I've been really, really happy with it. So love their products and highly, highly recommend.
Hi, I'm Claire.
And I'm Erica. We're the hosts of A Thing or Two. We are professional enthusiasts constantly on the hunt for the products, books, and trends that should be on your radar. And we share them with you every Monday, whether it's marinated olive oil that we're putting on everything, a deep dive on pillows, or the fact that suddenly gas stoves are on everyone's out list for 2023.
We challenge the friends we invite on the show to bring their own favorite thingies too. Like when Ellen Van Dusen spilled about the IG account that's keeping her current with the youths.
We also love a gift guide. We take listener questions, Dear Abby style, and tell you what to get your vegan minimalist coworker or your sister-in-law who loves to hunt.
So be sure to listen and follow A Thing or Two with Claire and Erica wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, you know, nowadays it's so easy to start a business in the sense that, you know, you just build a website and you just start with D2C. You don't necessarily have to even worry about going into stores until you start to gain a little bit of traction on, you know, the internet.
Right.
So back when you started, what was, I guess, the way to get traction? Like, what were your channels that you were even doing?
PR was so important.
Uh-huh.
Because basically we had magazines. There weren't the who, what, wheres and the birdies and the, there weren't all the websites pumping out information. There weren't news feeds. It was basically magazines. Mm-hmm. And you got notoriety by being in the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to the masthead. It was the front of the magazine that shows you who the beauty editor was. And I would literally go back to that phone book and start calling people and getting appointments. And then I would go to New York and I would show them my samples and get them excited. And that's kind of your job, is just to be a pitch person.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully you got your products in the magazine and people saw it and went and bought it. We actually did have a website from the beginning. I think we were the first beauty company. Urban was the first beauty company.
Wow.
To have a website.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then from there, did you go into like department stores or like what was that process like? Because I'm guessing retail was still king back then.
Retail was definitely king. There was no Sephora right at the beginning of Urban. It came shortly after.
What a time.
It was such
pre-Sephora.
Pre-Sephora.
Damn.
The place to go, if you can believe it, uh-huh, to go do innovative beauty was Nordstrom.
Wow. Okay. I do believe that, yeah, actually. I mean, you know, they still have like really cool things there.
They do have cool things there. But that was they had MAC.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of felt like Nordstrom would be the place that would understand Urban Decay. And they were bought regionally. And I love telling the story about being resourceful, because if you want to start your own business, it's really important to figure out how to be resourceful. You,
yes,
can't just go down the straight and narrow path, and you just have to figure out a way, right?
Yep.
You have to figure it out. And so I was working out of my little Laguna Beach bungalow, and my boyfriend's friend was a swimsuit rep. He would call on Nordstrom, and he went surfing, and he came by to take a shower before he went and did his calls.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was in the shower, I just snuck a peek at his buyer list, and I wrote down all the names and numbers. And when he left, I started making phone calls. And I got the swimsuit buyers to give me the names of the cosmetic buyers. And then I started calling people, and I basically drove down to San Diego. I met with the buyer. I got her to take it. And then I talked her into telling other Nordstrom buyers to meet with me. And then they would take it. And I just built the network that way.
That is...
It was hustle. That's,
yeah,
all it was.
I mean, I think that that's just something you have to be willing to do if you're starting a business. You know, like, I just think you have to be willing to be doing every job at the beginning and just like have a figure it out attitude.
Yeah, I'm 2 years into Cali Ray.
Yeah.
And I'm still hauling the UPS boxes into the office.
Yeah.
I'm not unpacking them anymore, but you know, I'm still doing everything. And I have to be honest, I love that part of it.
Honestly, the first couple of years of the business is such a special time. Like, we're 4 years into our business, which is still like, I feel like we're a baby brand still,
right?
Right? But the first like couple of years, I think there's nothing like it. Like, there's just like boots on the ground. You're doing everything. Like, I still remember literally hand packing every order before we had a warehouse, because I mean, we just didn't even know where to look for a warehouse. You know, we couldn't afford a warehouse.
Right.
It was like all just us doing everything on our own.
You just figured it out. I mean, we were doing, you know, reviews and sending product out and begging people to post a review, you know, like personal friends.
And yeah,
that's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah. So I want to talk about building a legacy brand and how it's really important to evolve, right? Because what's interesting about Urban Decay is that it was born in the 90s, and yet, you know, we're in 2024.
Right.
What, like 30 years into it?
Almost, not quite.
That's,
but yeah,
insane, right? And so many things have changed since then. Like, you know, there was the whole era of like PR, and then now it's become more influencer. How did you learn to evolve? What did you have to do as you started to see trends change? Like, do you remember any like specific things?
Well, I remember when social media first started, mm-hmm. and it was, I call it the perfect storm mm-hmm. of that's really how Urban Decay landed on top at Sephora. Was Sephora came to the U.S. and influencers and social media and YouTube became really important. And so we were able to really use that energy to do this whole vision of democratizing beauty. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had an eyeshadow primer potion, and what went viral was people couldn't get it all out, and people were cutting it open with Dremels and doing all this crazy stuff to get all of the eyeshadow primer out. Uh-huh. They were accusing us of putting it in this weird container so that they have to buy it again. And it just kind of became this whole thing. And I realized how important this was. Mm-hmm. So I ended up hiring someone who had helped us with some MySpace projects. I don't know if you remember MySpace,
God,
right?
This is back vintage. In
the day. Oh, yeah. And I remember my business partner, Tim, was like, we're going to hire someone to be on Facebook all day? I'm like, yes. And this was pre-Instagram, pre-everything else. And so we hired her. I remember bringing in Candy Johnson when she had just started and like sitting down and showing her product and, you know, treating them like beauty editors. So we really kind of saw the vision for where this was going and really tried to just build up our social media presence off the bat. So we were in the thick of it right away.
How were you so quick to respond? Because the thing is that when I look at brands, right, I think a mistake that a lot of brands make is that they don't hop on trends as quickly. And I remember back in the day when, you know, influencers were like coming into the world, right? Like it was, I remember in 2015, which was still new, like it was like a newer time. I worked in publishing and like everyone in my office was like, what the hell are influencers? Like this is so stupid. And like, I remember one of the editors being sent to Coachella, and in the same trip as her was a few other influencers. And like, she couldn't believe it, you know, because back then it was still new. And so how did you foresee that this would blow up like it did?
I think it was just because we sort of like you and I were talking about, you like to listen to your listeners mm-hmm. and get, take their questions. And I think we were really in tune with our customers and we saw what they were posting on YouTube. We were reading blogs, like we were into all of that. And so I think we just jumped right on it. It was pretty interesting because right after L'Oreal acquired us, we ended up going in and providing a like seminar from them on social media for the whole big company. And now they're the kings of dissecting and analyzing and getting all the analytics and all of it. And they know exactly what they're doing. But I remember going in and sending my social media director to go explain it to them. And it was a really crazy, it was just a big shift. And mm-hmm. I think it is hard today to stay on top of all those trends because they move so fast. I think the reason we were able to do it was because they didn't move quite as fast. We were able to start working with influencers from the beginning and help them grow, and they helped us grow, right? It was very symbiotic.
Yeah.
And so these people who are mega influencers today, like we helped them, so did a lot of other brands by doing the trips and all of the means for them to have this great content. And we just built each other up. Now it's harder because now you're in the era of the micro and you've got to figure out who's exactly right for your brand. And the trends happen so fast on TikTok. They're come and gone. Like as soon as you're on the trend, it's like, oh, you missed it.
Yeah.
So it's tougher today. Mm-hmm. And we were able to sort of ease into it. I think that's why we were so successful.
So then what are you doing differently today with Cali Ray? Like how are you kind of moving with the trends and just like ensuring that the brand stays relevant?
Well, I think I told you like PR was so important at the beginning and it's still important. But it's not nearly as important as our influencer efforts. You know, we do run some advertising, but it's all digital.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's printed anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just working within building a community, right? So you're getting that feedback back and forth. It's building mm-hmm. your social presence. So it's really different than how we did it before. It's, again, that barrier to entry was, how do I even make this stuff? And now the barrier entry is, how do I stand out?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're so right.
I've been using Sundays to prep my meals, and I cannot tell you guys the game changer that this has been in terms of how well I'm able to eat during the week and how not stressed I am about it. So something that would happen was, you know, the week would roll around and I would just forget to eat lunch because we were so unprepared at home. And the same thing would happen to Nish. So I've been taking Sundays to cook, and it's honestly such a game changer, especially when I love the pans that I'm cooking in. Enter Caraway Home. So this is not the first time I've talked about Caraway. If you follow me on Instagram and TikTok, you've probably seen me talk about them 1,000 times. Or if you follow along on the show, I've talked about them loads. I love Caraway because it's a non-toxic company. So like, you know, they create non-toxic products, which means that they're free of toxic materials like PFAs, PTFEs, PFOAs, or other hard to pronounce chemicals. It's also really easy to cook because it has a naturally slick surface, which means minimal oil or butter for slide off the pan eggs and just really easy cleaning, which was so important because for us, we need everything to be easy to clean because we just have limited time and I'm not out here trying to scrub my pans for like hours on end. So if you in the past have been like, I want to try a non-toxic pan, but I'm nervous about how, you know, it may degrade over time. So what I have found to be really helpful is when you are cooking a recipe that calls for high temperature, to essentially turn it up more gradually. So what I do is I'll start at low heat and then turn it up to medium and then like a medium high. So I don't just go all the way up from 0 to 100 because I find that that is just like not good for any pan, if I'm being completely honest. So again, obsessed with Caraway. I found that it makes cooking so enjoyable, not to mention I know I'm doing something good for my body because this is just something that I've become really particular about, making sure that things I can control within my environment, you know, as much as I can make them non-toxic, I try to do that. So Caraway Home has an offer for you. You're going to visit carawayhome.com/dreambigger to take advantage of this limited time offer for 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive to you guys, my listeners. So visit carawayhome.com/dreambigger or use code dreambigger at checkout. Caraway, non-toxic cookware made modern.
So talk to me about the process of building Caliray because, you know, you are someone who has already like one, you know, very successful business under your belt. So you could just be like, nope, I'm just going to do this. Why a second one? Because, you know, it's not easy to start a business.
It's not easy. But if you are an entrepreneur, it is a little harder. And I think you see this with a lot of people, even in beauty. It is harder to then just become a founder and let other people run your business mm-hmm. for you. Mm-hmm. It's not in your nature it wasn't in my nature at least, to let other people then create product and sit around a table and be the person who comments on their work versus being the person who does the creating. And that's really, as a founder, where you, in a big company where they evolve you, I don't care what strategic buys you, you get sort of moved into this role of, you know, advisor, overseer, you come do these podcasts, you go to retailer events, but you're not like getting your fingers dirty in the formulas. Like you're a formula creator. Like, mm-hmm. you know, how satisfying is it when you nail it?
That's the best.
It's the best, right?
And like being in the weeds, I literally just came out of a formulations meeting as I was like walking into the studio. So
you know, it's like you're on a high when like there's something in you. If you are a product development person, you cannot get it out of your system. And so I needed to be a creator again. I just didn't want to be a commenter. Mm-hmm. And so I also really believe that you need to do some disruption. So we did that with Urban. With Caliray, I traveled the world launching new countries with Urban. And the question I always got asked was like, what's it like on the West Coast? Are you always barefoot? Do you surf? Like everyone's really fascinated with the California dream.
Yeah.
Globally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought, well, that would be a really cool thing. Like, I'm from Texas. I was fascinated with the California dream. It sucked me out here. Like, what is it about that? How could I like roll that up into a brand? And wellness is really important to me. So I wanted to create this intersection between beauty and wellness. And at the same time, I wanted it to be sustainable because I started thinking about how many naked palettes are in a landfill right now. Like, how much plastic trash have I personally created? And how can we start to shift this industry mm-hmm. of small little packages to be more sustainable? Because mm-hmm. the fact is, like, shampoo bottles, easy to recycle. vitamin bottles, easy to recycle. They're all bigger than a yogurt cup. Mascara tubes, lip gloss tubes, vials, tiny little packages, super hard to recycle. So it's baby steps, but I wanted to start a brand that both embodied that dream, the California dream, embodied wellness, because that's really important to me, and then had a really strong sustainability ethos.
What product did you start with for Cali Ray?
I started with a tubing mascara called Come Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
I do love to surf. I love to work out. I don't love smudges. That was the thing I would always hear is I want volume and no smudging, because I hear a lot of feedback on mascara. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make a clean waterproof, which I did, but it's so hard on your lashes. So I really thought, well, let's go to tubing. The problem with tubing was it never provided volume. So I experimented with the formula, with brushes, and finally was able to create a tubing mascara that volumizes. Mm-hmm. And now it won't smudge. It won't come off when I surf.
Wait, what's tubing?
Oh, okay. Tubing is magic mascara. So it actually forms little tubes around your lashes, and it will come off in warm water, but not in cold water. So
that's genius.
It's genius. It won't come off when you sweat. It doesn't come off unless you put warm water on and then give it a little lash massage. And then literally you see the little tubes roll off your lashes. So if you got into a hot tub, it would come off, but you won't get smudging. You'll just have the little tubes. So you'll get a little black sprinkle, but you won't get raccoon eyes. So
wait, this is,
it's kind of amazing.
So cool.
I know. That's why I feel bad. I forgot your package today.
Okay,
I'm sending it to you.
I cannot wait to try it. Wow. I've never heard of this. That's really cool.
It's really, really cool. So tubing technology has been around, but it generally gave you long, skinny lashes. Uh-huh. And so I worked with, like I said, the formula and the brush to create more volume with a tubing mascara. And that's what's so unique. And it won an Allure Best of Beauty Award its first year out.
So. Incredible. So is it like, did you start with one product or did you start with a number of products?
I started with that. And I started with a skin tint that has a serum-like consistency that lets your skin shine through, reduces redness, really easy to wear. You just throw in 5 drops, smear it on your skin. You don't have to look. Mm-hmm. I go to yoga like that. If I want a little more coverage, then I can apply it with a brush. So I started with a skin tint that was really, it's 96% natural origin ingredients, really good for you, really feels like yummy on your skin, doesn't feel drying. And more does the coverage with a blurring with silica versus with pigment. So you don't look covered.
Yeah.
So I started with those. I started with a really balmy, oily lip gloss and a pencil. It's waterproof.
So 4 products.
So 4 products. And then we expanded into a wellness product. Mm-hmm. I worked with Thorn to create a beauty drink.
Wow.
Which was great. So that was all. It had NR in it. It had biotin. It had green tea phytosome. It had betaine in it to take all that metabolic trash out. It had a lot of great stuff in it.
Wow.
So we were in and out of that. We'll probably do another thing.
Like a limited edition drop, sort of?
Limited edition drop.
That's smart. So talk to me about the thought process behind something limited edition, because I actually think it's really smart and it drives some urgency, but you tell me.
So we did this limited edition product because we wanted people to understand that we were providing a wellness aspect in the makeup. So that's why we did it as this limited edition drop, was because we really wanted to put a stake in the ground. It's always something that's been important to me. Like, I had my kids at home with a midwife. I had a biodynamic garden at Urban Decay. I made all the office furniture out of non-off-gassing materials. So,
oh my gosh, you're like a trailblazer.
I'm really into all this stuff. It wasn't really the ethos of Urban Decay, so we didn't really talk about it. So I wanted it to be the ethos of Cali Ray. So that's why we did it. And so it was really, from my standpoint, the drop was about making that statement.
That is, it's very, very cool. So talk to me about, I guess, how you are able to do both. Like, I know you're like more in like a commentator role in Urban Decay, but how do you balance both? And what is the best time for an entrepreneur to even think of a second business?
So I actually am phased out on the Urban side. So it would have been really hard to do. I kind of was doing both for a little while. But, you know, when you start a new business, you're all in.
Yeah.
So you have to be. I just don't know how you do it. I mean, I think some people do it, but I wanted to be all in and really deep in the weeds. It would have been hard for me. I had built the Urban offices very close to my house, so I could ride my bike there, just like a little quick trip. But L'Oreal built L'Oreal West. They moved the business up to El Segundo. And I just, it ended up being like geographically a separation that allowed the involvement separation to happen.
So I want to talk about, like, when someone's business gets acquired, I feel like I speak to a lot of my friends and they go through this thing. It's almost like, I don't know, like it's something that you are excited by when you're building, right? Like the thought of it, especially when an acquirer is interested, you're like, oh my God, this is so exciting.
Right.
And then it happens and it's almost like an anticlimactic, like you're kind of sad. Did you go through that?
I didn't, because I went in with eyes wide open and I had been through a couple of private equity rounds and I understood what that meant. But I think it is very easy to get in that trap. And I think you have to understand exactly what you're doing. So I wanted to take some money off the table. I have two kids. You know, I just wanted to do that. I had worked a long time and there's no shame in that whatsoever. And so for me, I understood, like, they wrote me a check. I cashed it. They own the business and they were very respectful and listened. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you have to understand, like, once you cash that check, it's ultimately their decision. Mm-hmm. And so once you release that emotionally, like, hey, I can have my point of view, but ultimately it's not on me anymore. It's really, you have to do that. If you take it on, it's going to make you crazy.
How did you even get there, though? Because as an entrepreneur, I think it's really interesting because I don't necessarily like being told what to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I do know what you mean. So Urban was a big business and I had been doing it for 20 years.
Okay. So you're a little bit more mature than I was.
Right. I hadn't been doing it for just 4 years, right? So I think if you're only doing it for 4 years, you're still building your business. Maybe you want to take on some investment. You need to be really careful when you're taking on investment, how much you give away.
Agreed.
Right? That's really, really important. I'm talking about a sale to a strategic. Mm-hmm. Once you make that sale to the strategic, you have to understand they're going to buy the whole thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully at that point, you're feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you mean. So when it comes to taking an investment, I know that right now, I think access to capital is a lot easier. Okay. And I want to talk about what it was like back when you had just started Urban. Like, what was that process like if you were going out for, like, taking an investment? Because the thing is that for people who don't necessarily have access to capital, like, so easily, do you have any tips and tricks?
So I would say my Urban experience was an anomaly, and I don't know that anything from the 90s would apply now anyway. So Sandy had built Cisco, and so she was the investor.
That was easy,
right? It was lovely and was lovely enough to make me a founding partner and bring me in and all of that. So it was an amazing, again, opportunity, partnership, women supporting women. But today I would say there is a lot of capital out there, and I would, if I was a budding entrepreneur, I would go through the retailers. I would pitch into their, you know, Sephora has Accelerate. I think Ulta has a similar program. I think Blue Mercury has a similar program. I would start to try to reach out to those programs to see if, one, you can get in, and then you will get so much support and resources provided to you. I would say even if you don't get in, you'll probably get some capital, you know, leads, and you just start pitching and then you ask for referrals.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really how I did it with lipstick and nail polish bottles. Like, I would just ask for referrals. Like, who can fill this? Who can get me this? Who can get me that? Just, you cannot be afraid to ask. And, you know, an internet search for small VC personal care will yield you a lot of names.
Yeah.
And you might not get a lot of calls back, but you might.
Also, putting yourself out there, I think, is just really important.
I do. I agree. You have to be willing to be told no.
Yeah.
And just get back up and try again and try again and try again.
Amen. If nothing else, it really helps you become a really good, like, salesperson. You know, like, I can pitch you in my sleep.
Right.
You know, it's because I've gone through it so many times.
Yeah. And you have to, every single time you go out there, you've got to, like, I don't care if you got to drink a Red Bull or a cup of coffee or what. I mean, I'm not a Red Bull person, but I have a shot of espresso and just like it is on, whether it's on Zoom or it's in person. You got to remember, like, you got to bring that extra energy so that they can feel your belief. You have to make whoever you're pitching feel your belief. You obviously also have to have, you know, a great story, a great product, a good either forecast or vision for where the product's going to go and how you're going to build this business. You have to have all of those things. But I think your personal energy and belief in what you're doing is so important to the selling of your product.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, so I want to ask you audience questions because we got a bunch of them.
Okay.
Okay, so the first one is, what's your advice to stay motivated on a goal?
Well, I think you have to make sure you're always assessing the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So make sure that you set the goal, you start to work towards the goal. And as you're working towards the goal, make sure the goal is still a good goal. Because like we said, whether it's a TikTok trend, this world moves so fast that the goal may evolve. And so I think to avoid working towards something that's maybe not going to get you where you want to go, you have to always be making these micro adjustments. And if you're making micro adjustments, then I think the path stays really clear and you stay motivated.
Are you reflecting on goals in order to make small pivots if necessary?
We're definitely reflecting all the time. And sometimes we're spinning a little bit. Like, is that the right direction? You know, like, we'll look back. Was that the right choice? I think you do have to do some look back. And I think in order to assess goals, you have to be able to get your hands on as much data as you can.
Yes.
So make sure you're just combing through your Shopify data. Make sure you're, if you are in a retailer, make sure you're asking that retailer for as much as you can get and really sit down and really like comb through that information and see what you can learn from it.
I completely agree with you. And I think having a data-driven lens really does help. Like even things like, I don't know, having a proper way of looking at consumer surveys and like really utilizing them in a smart way, I think is super, super helpful as well.
Yeah. And I would tell you, I don't do enough consumer surveys.
Mm-hmm.
I think data is so important to give you that direction. But as a founder, it's also important to trust your gut.
Yes.
And yes, and to feel through it as well. Like data can only take you directionally north, south, east, west. But then to find the exact location where you need to land, that's all gut and instinct.
So it's funny that you say this because so my husband is my co-founder and we're very different in the sense that he is extremely data driven. He like comes from a tech background and, you know, that's just how he lives and breathes. And for me, I'm like a creative, right? And so for me, it's very much like, yes, I like to look at data, but at the same time, I'm like, no, I can feel this trend coming. Like people are starting to talk about it. And that's kind of how I do my thinking, right? So always it's kind of a marriage between the two worlds in order to make the right decision.
Well, I feel you. My husband was the CFO of Volcom.
Okay.
And he's involved with me on Cali Ray. And there's definitely intense conversations sometimes.
Yep.
And it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good to have him completely question a direction.
Yes.
And force you to think about it in a different way. Like, oh, it's so obvious to me, but did you think about it through this lens? Did you think about it through that lens? And if you think about it through all of those different points of view and you still arrive at your conclusion, great. But maybe it takes you in a slightly different direction.
You know, I think what you're saying is really valuable. And on a macro perspective, I think that when I look at companies and they skew one way, like say the whole team is super creative and there's nobody who's giving the other perspective, which is like, I don't know, maybe it challenges their way of thinking. I don't think that it's as well balanced as, you know, a company with like two like thought processes, I suppose,
right?
Because then you debate and then you land on like a decision that's actually like quite smart. And I think you get ahead faster if you come from that side.
I think you have to be really, to be successful, you have to be open to different points of view.
Yes.
You have to be open to being challenged and be okay with that. You cannot be so like ingrained in your own perspective. Like, I do believe you have to be true to your vision as a brand, be true to your vision as a founder, but you have to allow yourself to be challenged.
There's that saying, strong beliefs loosely held. And that's kind of how I like to operate my whole life, really, because I'm very opinionated. But at the same time, if some piece of information comes to me, which I'm like, well, shit, I never thought of that, then like I will definitely digest it and make a decision that's, I guess, like less ego driven and more so like, okay, this is the right decision.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Your ego has to be taken out of it.
Yeah.
your ego has to go away. And you'll, I mean, you'll see as a, once you become a parent, you yeah. have to follow that same philosophy. It's really, really important.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's a whole different.
It's a whole different thing.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
We could do another podcast on that.
Truly.
If you want.
Yeah. If, when we have a kid, I'm calling you.
Okay.
Do you have any tips for someone who is starting a beauty company today?
Well, I would say it's so important that you have a vision that is differentiated. There is a lot of beauty out there now. I like to say the Urban Decay mission is accomplished, right? We wanted to diversify beauty. We wanted to democratize it. We wanted to take it away from all those big companies and put it in the hands of everybody. And it's cool. There's a slice of the pie for everyone, but your slice better be really unique and different.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go in and just be a Me Too brand. It's really hard out there. And so your message, either your formulations, your message, your branding, something has to stand out and be different.
What did you start to do? Then this is my question, because it just got me thinking. As, I mean, Urban Decay was positioned as such a unique brand, but I'm sure over time there were these like copycats, okay? Whether it was a specific product they were copying on your, or you're like, oh, that webpage looks kind of similar, mm-hmm. you know? What do you do about that? Because did it irritate you as a founder? How did you continue to, I guess, rise above that and stay really like focused on your vision?
Well, there's a couple of things happening there. Number one, there's just flat out trademark violation. And you have to, if you have a great name like Naked,
mm-hmm.
right, you have to trademark Naked Palette. You have to enforce it. You have to stand up for it. And I mean, we even had to go up against limited brands, right? To enforce that trademark. There's also patterning, which is someone that just does something similar. And you can look at that as taking away business, or you can look at it as a compliment. It's just the nature of the beast. And hopefully the original, you just keep talking about why yours is better, the original. There's all kinds of ways that people come in. I actually went and did at CEW, I think it was. CEW. It was another like cosmetic industry mm-hmm. event. And I actually went up and talked in front of this whole group of industry people who had all copied my Naked palette and said, you know, there's a slice of the pie for everyone, but it can't be a direct copy. So I think you use your industry influence to sort of like call it out a little mm-hmm. bit in the nicest way.
I love that. So did you think to trademark it really early, or did you do that as a response to people who were kind of copying?
Well, it's really hard to trademark a name like mm-hmm. Naked. We had to trademark Urban Decay, Naked Palette, and we did think to do it pretty early on because we had been in business for a while, and so we saw that people would copy things.
That is very smart. Okay, last question. Can you share your morning routine if you have one?
Oh, I have a morning routine.
Oh, tell me.
Oh. Okay, so let's say Monday morning, I usually get up around 5:15.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah. I have 20 ounces of water
uh-huh.
with some vitamin C and some B vitamins. Then I get my coffee
mm-hmm.
and I get dressed and I throw on a tiny bit of skin tint and I run out and I go to the gym and I work out with a trainer from 6 to 7. I take my dog with me, which is the most fun part. He comes with me to my little training gym.
I love that.
And he's highly featured on my Instagram in gym routines. The other day he was on my back while I was doing a plank. So, you know, we use him as ballast all the time. And then I usually come back. I'll usually have a protein shake. And then I try to go play tennis for an hour and a half. So I get all my workouts in like boom, boom, boom.
Sorry. So you train and then you play tennis?
Yes.
As, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like it's my drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It's my dopamine. Gets me fired up for the rest of the day. Then I come back and usually in between tennis and the workout, I've like thrown on some eye makeup. So I'm kind of ready to go. I just shower off
mm-hmm.
because I have a great setting spray. And so my makeup doesn't move.
Love.
Right. So then I go next door. I own the house next door to mine. And that's where Kelly Ray is. And
so
head next door and get to work with my team.
Uh-huh.
I usually have a couple of Zoom calls or have a lunch meeting, something. And we're there kind of late usually, mm-hmm. like because it's a startup. And then I head home, have dinner with my family. And we sit around and a lot of times we talk about business because my husband's the CFO. His office stays in our house, though. So it's great because in front of our kids, we do talk about work. So they're really getting this great education. It keeps the TV off. It keeps the conversation lively. I get challenged a lot. He gets challenged a lot. The kids weigh in. And then we usually have some, this is our big dessert, is a sugar-free electrolyte popsicle. And
oh, wow.
I know, it's really...
Wait, that's so smart. I love electrolytes. Which ones do you use?
My husband likes the Pedialyte ones.
Uh-huh.
I don't love them.
Yeah.
I like this. I think they're called squinchers or something. They're amazing.
Really? I've never heard of that.
There's a dragon fruit flavored one. And it's like 15 calories, no
wow.
added sugar. And it's just like basically sucking on flavored electrolyte ice.
Okay, this is actually such a hot tip because I love Element. Have you tried Element?
I haven't. I want to try it.
Oh my God. Okay, they have a raspberry salt flavor, which is like actually the most life-changing thing ever. Like I'm salivating thinking about it, but I'm going to totally make a little popsicle out of that. That's
yeah,
so
you could
smart.
You could do... I mean, we buy them, but mm-hmm. you really could have a little popsicle thing and just make a strong electrolyte solution.
Yeah.
And make yourself some popsicles. And it's a great little, like you go to bed hydrated and you've had something sweet for the evening.
Oh my gosh.
I do my vitamin routine after that.
Uh-huh.
So I do a big cup of like Calm,
uh-huh.
the magnesium drink. So I do Calm in a cup and sip it like tea and then take my supplements and that's my day.
Wow. I mean, powerhouse over
some
here.
Some play, some work.
Love it.
Yeah.
Tell everyone where they can find you. This was so fun.
Oh, I had such a good time talking to you. I'm on Instagram at Wendy Zomner.
Mm-hmm.
I think my TikTok is also at Wendy Zomner.
Love.
And I have a Facebook page, but I don't really use it that much. Mm-hmm. So that's basically it.
Amazing.
I'm not like all over the place.
Thank you so much for being here. This was so fun.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode and feel like it brought you value, don't forget to rate the show and leave a review. It takes 5 seconds and really helps the show grow so I can keep bringing on awesome guests. If you want to follow me behind the scenes, you can find me on Instagram at Sif Hyder. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss a thing. I drop new episodes every Tuesday, so come hang with me and shoot the shit with some really smart people, learn and unlearn, and have a lot of fun. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.